when I came back from Iraq and we were at Fort Lewis, Washington, firefights are a lot better than what they subject us through when we come back. I mean, just all day of, I'm so-and-so from such-and-such, and you're going to fill out this form. Make sure you put your name here or there. Oh, you're an idiot. You used blue pen instead of black pen. Go back to the beginning of the line. We're here for 15 minutes to talk about what benefits you can get, and we don't care about any of that. We've been away for, you know, a year. You think I care about what claims I may or may not be claiming now that I may or may not regret when I'm 60 years old? I don't care about that right now. We got one thing on our mind and one thing only, getting back to our families. That's it. Nothing else matters. Before we left Iraq, we had this Palm Pilot with questions. Have you ever seen a dead body? Yes. Have you ever been exposed to uranium ammunition? Yes. Have you ever been in loud noises? Yes. Have you ever wanted to hit somebody? Yes. Have you ever felt violent? Yes. Find me anybody in America today that hasn't felt any of those. In Iraq, we're fine. When we were in Iraq and howitzers went off, boom, weren't expecting it. None of us flinched. No big whoop. We're used to it. But yet, driving down the street, 4th of July, somebody sets off a cherry bomb next to the road, and I nearly come unglued. But they give us these presentations, and now PTSD, if you've ever experienced a traumatic event or felt helpless or fearful, I'm a combat vet. I've been in more bar fights than you've probably had bowls of cereal. You're going to talk to me about being fearful? I'm the guy that goes into those fights. I'm the firefighter that goes into those burning buildings when other people are running out afraid. I'm the guy looking for where's the problem. Don't talk to us like we're fearful, scared little kids that want mommy to come help us. That's the impression we get when the chaplain and VA reps and psychologists from so-and-so school and all these other places come talk to us. Look at the room. All the soldiers are tuning out. You can see it. Click, 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 click. Besides, we felt fine. We're fine. All we want to see are our families. Everything's peachy keen. You know, you don't go to work for a month. You do nothing but have sex, eat pizza, drink beer, and play video games and go fishing and hiking. And that's pretty much it. And then you go back to work. And then 6 months or so, emotional reactions start to happen. And my company that I was within started noticing conversations were like, I can't sleep. You know, I'm taking a lot of sleeping pills. Or, did you hear about Staff Sergeant so-and-so? He's having trouble with alcohol. Common stories. I was like, wow. They didn't quite make the connection. And I was in a class on psychopathology at Portland State, and we were talking about anxiety disorders. And so I started, you know, debating. I was like, all right, I'm sure somebody here has had a stalker. That changes how you view walking across college campus. You know, you start to look at people. And I said, amplify this, and snipers and all kinds of stuff. And this guy came up to me and said he had done some volunteer work with this group called returningveterans.com, practitioners in Oregon area that volunteer their time for veterans. So I called one of them up. And I said, well, I want to come talk to her and see what she and the organization has to offer and then bring that back to my unit. And when I went and talked to her and became a weekly thing, I went twice a week. Sometimes I go once a month.
What was it that went from I'm just getting information to, this could be useful?
It just kept going, really, talking about what was going on, just kind of like sharing information between each other. And it was like, okay, you want to meet again next week? And at first I felt kind of weird because like, well, I'm wasting your time because there's nothing wrong with me. And sometimes I still tell her the same thing. Her great answer was like, no, you're not wasting my time and you don't have to be a certain craziness to come. And the founder of the organization, she said, it's not about you having to be a certain level of disturbed to warrant our time. You've done what this country's asked you to do. We're just trying to repay some of that debt. And I was like, oh, okay, didn't think about looking at it that way. So I've been going for like 2 years or so. I had no idea that I needed to see anybody because the language used didn't apply to me. I wasn't fearful or scared or anything like that, but I did have some other symptoms. And all this stuff really came out. So it was really helpful for me. I started to distance myself from my past reactions, I was like, holy cow, here's a bunch of signs and symptoms that I had that I wasn't aware of when I was in it. Holy cow, I was hypervigilant. Holy cow, I was getting anxious when a group of 8 Arab students were behind me in line at Portland State, and they were talking in a foreign language I couldn't understand, and all the hairs on the back of my neck were up. And I was just like, okay, where's the threat coming from? And I'm going to go get it. And the other side of myself was going, these are just students. What is wrong with you? Scanning rooftops as I'm walking down the street, you know. The first time I drove down the street, I was following a friend who loves to speed. And so I had to speed to keep up with him. And we're zooming down Portland to get to this comedy club. And as soon as I walked in the comedy club, I went straight to the bar and got a shot. And like, what's up with you? I was like, intersection, 3 people. 2 people had a backpack. There was a group of people inside that alley. There was X number of people on the sidewalk as we were passing by. I mean, every person on the side of the road, on the rooftop. Did you see the person on the 4th floor window looking down at us as we were driving by? I saw the person. Sleep, forget about it. I slept all the time. Some people have opposite reactions. Some people can't sleep. For me, I slept all the time. Anger issues, trust issues. I can trust my guys, but I can't trust the people I work with. I mean, a guy came behind me at work and put me in a chokehold, and without even thinking, he was just playing. Well, this guy wasn't very smart because I got out of the chokehold, and I turned around, and I slammed him against the oven, had my hands around his throat, and I was squeezing. So looking at all the different signs and symptoms and stuff that I had since Iraq, I'm like, holy cow, I didn't see this when I was in it. But now that I've gotten help for myself, I can see that I needed a lot of help, and I'm as open as I can about what I go through. Sometimes it's embarrassing, but if I can go in as deep as I can into what I'm feeling and find out the commonality between myself and somebody else, maybe I can help them find their way out. That's the hope. And there's a lot of us veterans, there's a lot of psychologists that don't even like the term PTSD. Some researchers in Canada are proposing different terms, such as a combat stress injury, to where the perception is that just like you sprained your ankle, you're not going to, you know, walk around with 80 pounds on your back for another couple of days and going to heal and then you'll be fine. We don't have that same mentality when it comes to PTSD. The mentality that we have is you've been in combat, you are forevermore a killer, you're forevermore emotional and aggressive, quick to anger, quick to flare. You're now defective goods. You are different. And I find that in my job all the time when I get angry and I can see the reaction from my manager is like backing up a little bit. Oh my gosh, he's a combat vet and he's going to snap any second now. He's going to go off with an M6 machine gun and shoot at this small town just like in Rambo. And what makes it hard to fight that is because there is some truth to that quick flare. We're trained for this. But it's a stereotype for our culture and our guys. You know, guys don't have emotions. So we have lots of men who are unaware of their emotional depth or how to handle those emotions. And so instead of actually looking at it, they repress it even more. They push it down even more. They drink it away even more. They ignore it even more. And then when this person comes up and talks about PTSD, that's the same kind of dialogue that they're not wanting to admit for themselves. So they're not even listening. There's tons and tons of stuff out there for soldiers and their families. But the way it's presented is not relevant. It's not good enough for us to say, all right, my door's open. That's not good enough. Find out how to get that resources out there. So I've got this presentation where I talk about, you know, I was a Marine, National Guard. I volunteered fire department in Houston. You know, guy's guy. So I'm safe. I'm not here to give you a hug. No. I'm going to talk about our training, train to kill, and how this changes the pathways of the brain. And I deliver it in terms for people that they don't seem that now they're broken. And it's not all just talk therapy where you go sit on the couch and cry. I mean, there's virtual reality therapy. There's a cognitive behavioral therapy, which is some really interesting stuff. Storytelling, there's all kinds of stuff, but the 2005 Oregon Violent Death Report, pretty much across the board, the rates were higher for veterans, suicide rates, but the rates for 18 to 25-year-old veterans compared to non-veterans were 5 times higher, and with multiple deployments, problems increase. when I give this presentation, NCOs and officers and everybody, well, I'm fine. You know, I'm a 12-year, 15-year, 20-year military. I'm hardened steel. That's awesome. Not everybody goes through these emotional reactions. I went through these reactions. Chances are somebody under your direct command is going through these same things. Chances are they may be at risk for suicide. Now, my question to you is, what kind of NCO, what kind of an officer are you to ignore these facts and to not try to get help for your soldiers? That is negligence of the care that has been bestowed upon you. And it is not only about taking out that machine gun, it's also looking out for the welfare and well-being of those troops under your command. And by not learning about this and learning what resources are out there, you're failing in your command.